don't want to take him off, but he, towards the end, he did, he voluntarily became like a scapegoat in the beginning. But as such, we all are, you know, like, I mean, things like that, you know, the you know, that could be deemed as, like, you know.
Please give up. We're holding a bottle, it's a juice bottle, it's addressed as if it's a prescription, yes?
Yeah, because it looks like wee.
To Simon, yes. Forensic results, please give up horse riding. What's the gag?
Well, it's because I went horse riding yesterday and I was scared. But it's like, the thing is that everything between the band, we've always been sort of scapegoats for each other. And like, even Robert takes his fair share of stick. And Lowell used to actually want it more. And towards the end of him being in the group, I suppose it did get a bit vindictive. But that's because...
Well, you mean Lowell enjoyed being the butt of gags?
Yeah, he loved it because his contribution to the group was minimal, to say the least. This is the way that he could get attention and, like...
Be part of the gang, is it?
No. Not even that. It was a way of, like, a child having a tantrum, and he'd do things that would be particularly annoying. And because I've got a sort of short fuse anyway, he would provoke me. And because he... like, Robert can let things like that ride. He can just ignore things. I, most of the time, can't. So Lowell would sort of, you know, it's almost like a role reversal. In fact, Lowell was actually picking on me in a way because he, you know, I'd want to just be left alone. But when you get someone come up to you and getting prodding and saying, fight me, and then Perry would come along and say, no, don't. Lowell, just leave him alone. And then Lowell would say, well, he won't do anything because he's a wimp. And I'd look at Lowell and think, he used to shit, and I would punch his lights out. I mean, I'm not mean in a macho way or anything like that, but Lowell was physically unfit. He was drinking brandy for breakfast. And all his problems with his then girlfriend and now wife spilled over into the group, and it was just too much. In an environment where you're in a residential studio or something like that, you don't need other people's problems spilling over into your own life because you've got enough to worry about yourself. And, you know, like, it sort of started, worst time it started was when we were doing Kiss Me at Miraval. And, like, it got boring. It got, I mean, it was there where it happened, and we did do things like put balloons down his toilet, but as sort of jolly japes, I suppose.
Yeah.
But then when we'd have to sit down for dinner, and we'd be at one end of the table, and Lowell would be up the other end with his wife, with a bottle of brandy, just rowing. He's thinking, you know, Christ, we do not need this. And so that's when I suppose that things did get vindictive because he was being negative to what we were doing there. I mean, he wouldn't come in the control room or anything like that, or listen to what we'd done or anything like that. And he wouldn't be bothered to learn anything.
So what was his role then? I mean,
His role basically was that because he'd known Robert since school, Robert felt an obligation towards him.
To keep him in employment?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Lowell had done some things that were... I mean, he was never a very good drummer, which, you know, which is why he went on to keyboards. But he was in a very lucky position that, I mean, Paul even sort of went to his house to like try and teach him keyboard lines, because Paul's really talented and can play anything. But Lowell just couldn't be bothered because he liked Paul. Lowell liked the fame side of it, not the creative side. And there's got to be a break for, you know, like, it can't be all drinking and having a laugh. You know, there is a side to it that has got to be to buckle down and learn what to do. And okay, he wasn't talented, but what we were saying was, you know, that even if you're not that talented, you can still be in the group as long as you learn the minimal bits that we give you to do. But he couldn't even be bothered to that. And of course, in a closed environment, it sort of causes resentment.
And it's just weird behaviour, because you said yourself that he was quite an intelligent bloke.
I wouldn't say he was a clever bloke. I would say he was very manipulative. And he knew what he had a good financial head on him. And when we'd rejoined the group, which was about the same time that Boris joined, and Paul had been in for a bit again, Boris, Paul and I were on wages, and it's horrible to talk about money because it shouldn't come down to that, but when... When we were on tour, I had my girlfriend then at the time in a flat, and I was getting about £80 a week and doing what I thought was really hard work, and Lowell would be in clubs like flashing loads of money about, and I remember when we were on tour, we were in the club, and Lowell sort of said to me, I sort of tried to talk to him. I said, I'm really pleased to be back in the grit. I'm really pleased. He said, for the money. And I said, no. He said, well, yeah, but money's got to do a lot with everything. And I thought, you wanker. And that was a bone of contention from almost afterwards, because...
Was he always like that?
He always wanted to make sure that he was. I don't know. Lowell's always liked money. You know, like even if like this sort of side of how can I say it? Like, instead of getting out a fiver to buy a packet of cigarettes to get out, a £50 nut, you know, a 20-pound note. It was, you know, because it sort of, that was almost proving his worth in some way. You know, but then again, he could be a really nice bloke, but he was very money orientated, and the only reason why he was in the group was because of the dosh, and the times he did come in the control room, he'd be completely bollocksed out of his head. And there's that old saying that babies and drunks tend to tell the truth, and he'd sort of come in and say, I think what you're doing is a load of old shit. And
having not contributed anything to that.
So it just got too much in a closed environment. When someone is there, you know, for 4 months or something like that, it just gets too much. And most of the time, he wouldn't know what time of the day it was. He'd go to bed. He'd get pissed up at breakfast, go to bed at 7, get up again at 2, get, you know, and have like huge brandies, and go to bed again. But then come in and say that, you know, that what we were doing was shit, and basically just got all too much, and I don't think the cure a glamorous group, you know, like we don't want to drive about in limos and shit like that. That's, you know, that's why we got the black van and we all get in there together. But Lowell loved all that side of it, you know, limos and bollocks like that. And it was just best that he went. And Robert knew sort of Paul Boris's, my discontentment with him and how it was causing friction within the group. And so Robert took the decision to send him a very nice letter, like saying, let's not build walls. And then, you know, this whole court case thing came about, which is...
When did he send the letter?
I think that was 1989.
What, saying let's not build walls, meaning what, let's try and work together?
No, saying, basically saying that the group were touring next year, it would be best if you didn't. But let's not build walls, you know, that meaning, you know,
let's not say that in the future you might not.
Well, just to not stop talking, and there'd be resentment and stuff like that. Because another tour with Lowell, someone would have killed him. I mean, even before Perry was in the group, him and I used to hang around with each other, and the states that we saw Lowe in were bloody ridiculous. And there was one night that was backstage, and there was some people come back to get autographs and things, and Lowe was walking around bollocks down of his head.
Can you remember where this was backstage?
Oh, no, it was America, but I don't remember where. And he's walking around with a megaphone, shouting in people's ears to get attention. Mm. And, you know, this is the first night, and we had to get him into the hotel.
First night of the tour.
Mm. We had to get him in to the hotel on a baggage trolley because he passed out. And then we all took turns to keep on going into his room to see if he'd like chucked up and sort of died and stuff like this. And
so this must have been the tour before Kiss Me then.
Right.
Didn't he get replaced on the Kiss Me tour?
No, this.
He played the Kiss Me tour.
Yeah.
So that must have been the Kiss Me tour.
Yeah.
First date on the Kiss Me tour. In that case, we can work out where that was because that'll be recorded somewhere, won't it?
Right.
The office, I'm sure, will know. So it was the first American date on the Kiss Me tour, right?
And you know, it's just sort of. It just got too much, really.
Mm. You mentioned something about an incident in Dublin where he walked into the studio and kicked your microphone over or something.
Yeah, oh no, that's when we were actually doing the Kiss Me album, he decided to come in and he was bollocksed again. And Roger, the keyboard player at the time, and me were doing a track together, and he stumbled over the Lowell stumbled over the microphone, which ruined the track. We had to start again, and I went in and said, "What was that all about?" And he said, "Well, it don't matter because it was shit anyway." But the one in Dublin was when we were doing the soundtrack for the opening film of the Kiss Me tour. And again, I was spending a lot of time with Perry, and Lowell was bollocks by about 4 in the afternoon. And he just sort of came out and said, fight me, you're a wimp. Which at that point Perry said, "Lowell, you know, just leave it, because you know what's going to happen." And he said, "Yeah, I know what's going to happen because he's a wimp." So then Perry went back into the control room and Lowell and me had a fight.
As he had predicted. Yeah. God, it's sad. You just kind of think there's somebody who could have had it made, in a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he could have had a nice life and has deliberately fucked it up for himself.
See, thing is that what it's like when Perry joined the group, it made things so much easier because Robert Burris, Paul and I were doing some demos. We needed a keyboard player. Perry didn't have much experience in keyboards, and like Perry just locked himself in his room for 2 weeks and learned how to play the songs. You know, that's dedication. Lowell could have done that if he'd applied himself. And that's what, you know, Lowell would rather be out on the town with his sort of city business friends. And it just, it always sort of grated against what I think the band stand for, which is, we're just sort of normal, really. Well, I hope. I mean, in this environment, I don't think we are. But then that's because we've been here for a long time. But 99% of the time, we're just normal. You know, we don't have orgies, we don't take drugs, and we have done. But
isn't that what normal people do? Orgies and things. You should hear around our village, believe me. The stories we hear in our village. I thought life was racy in London, but when I moved to the country, my God, I started hearing stories. still.
That's weird, actually. The village that I've moved to in the bus at the bus stop, there's kids take. I mean, in this village, there's only a pub and a school. It's got kids take drugs written on the bus stop.
Stick on to life. Yeah. Good for you, kids. Come on, play in the fields and take drugs. Yeah. That's probably enough of Lol for the moment. I do see we'll return to him at some point. There was a curious tale that Robert couldn't remember, and I suspect that there is no truth in it whatsoever, but I'll ask anyway. There's one report somewhere in the cuttings that on the first date of the Kiss Me tour in America, the band had to be barricaded into their hotel on the first night and hired 12 sumo wrestlers as bodyguards.
No, we did a TV show in France with sumo wrestlers.
It's wonderful how these things get distorted, isn't it?
No, what happened, I've forgotten the programme in France, but we did it a few times and there was sumo wrestlers there, which you sort of go into the corridor with each other and sort of the cure and 12 sumo wrestlers and we sort of said, oh, hello there, and tried to shake hands, and they sort of found it a bit bizarre, but they would never had sumo wrestlers as bodyguards.
It'd be quite nice actually to reproduce that little cutting, because it's only a tiny thing from one of the daily tabloids.
Right.
You just put that cutting in, see what actually happened was, and somehow the story's got crossed, because there's an awful lot that gets printed that is just crap. I think that's it. It's always worth pointing out. You within the period of this book, I mean, it was starting in 1987, you got married within that period, didn't you?
Yeah.
When did you actually get married then?
Fuck,
can't remember.
No.
Roughly?
Something like... No idea. I haven't got a bollock in this year for not...
Remembering the anniversary.
Remembering it, yeah.
Yeah. This is why God invented diaries. Yeah. Luckily, my wife and I are both very good about not remembering.
It's really weird, actually, because the anniversary this year, my wife said the most classic thing. She said, "You don't even know what day it is, do you?" I thought, "Hang on, if I'm getting a bollocking, it's our anniversary. Sorry, I haven't got anything yet."
Just quite managed to get that. Hung in there by the skin of your teeth. I meant to. But it wasn't long before Robert got married, was it?
Originally we were going to have a double marriage, because when we were in when we were doing Kiss Me, Mary said that we should all get married, and she ripped up some paper and as confetti and threw it across me, and she said, "You are going to, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah, okay then." And then I went and told my wife that we were going to get married, and we were going to have a double wedding, but there was too many complications, because like Robert and Mary being Catholic and us not, so they wouldn't do it.
The church wouldn't go along.
Yeah.
Churches do get in the way, don't they?
Yeah.
Right.
But it just meant two parties instead.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, because I can't find anything in the cuttings explaining what you meant. Somebody must remember. Maybe you could, between now and January, you could ask your missus. And
yeah, I will. When did we get married?
And write it down. All right, that would be really embarrassing, actually, wouldn't it? She'd hit you again. we'll find a way.
She's used to it.
Where did you get married?
In a place called Nutfield.
Where's that? Nut, N-U-T?
Yeah. That's in Surrey. Because we were living in a one-bedroom flat at the time.
In Nutfield.
In Nutfield, yeah. But it was a really nice little village. And
also, Nutfield, that's not the village you're living in now.
No.
Why were you living? Is it quite near where Robert is, or something?
Well, no, it's... See, where we come from, like, all around the Gatwick area, it's really strange. I was brought up in Hawley, which is one side of Gatwick. Robert grew up in Crawley, which is the other side of Gatwick. But as you go out, you get more and more little villages. And I had to sort of spread out more and more. I went to Nutfield first, then to a place called Crowborough, and then to where I'm now. A place called Withyham, which is near Tunbridge Wells. But it was just sort of... just couldn't sort of stand living around Hawley anymore, because it's just sort of like... you walk past a Chinese restaurant and there's sort of like loads of thugs like hanging about. I can't handle this. And...
probably nice young lads.
Yeah, probably.
That look much like you would look if you were now their age, and you probably terrified people your age when you were that age.
Yeah, but I sort of did things when I was there. I didn't sort of
hang
outside Chinese restaurants. But then again, saying that isn't their fault. There's nothing to do. But I sort of always like, it's sort of a cliche to sort of go out into the country, but I've just always been into pubs and like talking to old boys in pubs and things that I really enjoy it. And there was a cheap little flat going, you know, and Carol was still at work, and we could afford to rent it. And then actually, I moved somewhere else after that. It's been quite, yeah.
So anyway, so you got married in the church there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Did the band come?
Yeah. Robert was best man. Yeah.
And then you reciprocated when
yeah.
Are there any stories to be told from the wedding? Did anything outrageous happen? Or?
Bananarama came.
Bananarama
cake,
why?
Because I was friends with him at the time for some bizarre reason. I don't know why.
Bananas.
And
I bet they all got gutted and threw up.
No, they left quite early.
Yeah.
All their reputation of drinking isn't true, really.
Everybody's reputation isn't true. You just invited them and they turned up as
sweet. Well, because at the time I used to go up to London, and we'd met them at a TV show in Holland, and sort of got on with them quite well. And I used to go up and go to the web club with them sometimes. Just
to wang.
But it was very... it was like a very dull wedding reception, because like just most of my friends, is one hobby is drinking, and so I sort of like instead of having a lavish spread or anything, just sort of put some money behind the bar. And let them get on with it, and then it was sort of like, "You're me best mate," sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, just one second, I'll just
put on the video for Jason. So, did you go anywhere for honeymoon?
No.
Is that why the honeymoon tour was called the honeymoon tour? Because Robert didn't go anywhere for a honeymoon either.
No, that's why it was called that.
And did you take the wife?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did they enjoy it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. there was an incident in Madison Square Garden, I gather, where the doorman didn't actually recognise the band. Do you remember that? And wouldn't let the band in.
I don't think it was there, but that's happened several times.
Yeah.
We've sort of gone out for a drink and tried to get backstage and sort of... I can't actually remember it happening at Madison Square Gardens, but it has happened several times. But there's one place in France, and we'll be saying, we are honestly the band, and it's about saying, we'll prove it. He's saying, well, we can't. He said, well, sing a song then. We haven't got any guitars here. If you let us backstage,
we'll play the guitar.
Yeah.
Right. That was Law doing his solo version of Wild Thing at the Ritz. I think Robert wished rather about that a bit. So that's right. Are there any sort of good road crew stories that ought to be told? I mean, because you've obviously got a number of people that have worked with you loyally and faithfully over a period of years. I mean, are there any stories in the last few years?
I can't think of any sort of road crew stories. It's the whole thing about the road crew. Like we've sort of got people that we really like mm-hmm. Jez and everything. And
what's Jez's proper name?
Jeremy.
Jeremy
Webb. And there was another chap who's now working for Depeche Mode.
What is Jez's job then?
Guitar tech,
right.
And general joke teller, I suppose. I don't know, because when we first started, we had to do most of it ourselves. Thing. And like we'd sort of do festivals and see like other groups, road crew, and they'd sort of be doing disgusting things, you know, like, you know, for backstage passes and like because we've been going for so long now, we've met people that are genuinely nice. Like there's another bloke, Tom Wilson, who's now working for Depeche Mode, who was just, he just turned up to a concert in Boston. And he was so enthusiastic that he was just there to sort of, he was a local crew member who just got a job for a day to hump things. And we thought he was so brilliant that we said, oh, well, you want to come on tour? He said, yeah, okay, fine. And it's like the whole thing with the road crew have been like that. They've sort of been, every one of the road crew, it sounds like really corny, but we actually really do get on with. But anecdotes about them, I can't really think of any, because there are a lot, but
it was like Steve who was here is the engineer.
Engineer, yeah.
And Bruno
was up. Yeah.
What's Bruno's job description?
What's Bruno's job description?
I have to write him down as something. How long has he been with the band? He's obviously been
ages,
around a long time.
Ages. He started off. He lived in the flat downstairs from Boris. And we needed.
Where would that
be? Not in Hillgate.
Yeah.
And we needed a drum roadie. And Boris sort of knew him, so he got him in. And as the years have gone by, he's Bruno's job description is, I can't actually define it. He's just Bruno, yeah.
He's not road manager as such, or personal assistant, or
I suppose that would be the closest thing to call him, yeah. But it's really odd because it doesn't work like that. Like, I'd like to know what he does, but
extra hand. So when would he have been co-opted into it then?
That was on the Head and Daughter.
He crops up in videos all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is clearly a well-loved member of the family.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nice. Who else was here tonight?
Nick?
Nick, yeah. Well, right. What's Bruno's full name as well?
Brunning.
Bruno Brunning.
Well, see, this is really weird.
Frank Brunning.
His real name's David Brunning, but that's not actually his real name. But then he calls himself Bruno Brunning, but we call him Billy Bongo.
So, fine.
Or just Bongo.
Well, I'm glad you made that clear.
It gets very confusing. The other chap, Nick, who's also known as Metalhead, he was Bruno's friend, so he's sort of come in to assist as well.
And has he been around for?
He's been around for about a year now.
So he's not quite yet long term family.
Well, he is sort of, really, yeah.
He's accepted.
Yeah.
I mean, are there people who sort of stay for quite a long time, but you never quite feel they're really part of it yet?
There have been, but it's sort of got so. See, it's a really weird thing to describe because it's almost elitist, but not in a smug way, that you don't actually realise. Like, it's like when I phone up my wife and stuff like that, and I say, oh, I got a Christmas card from Shawnee Boy. She said, who's Shawnee Boy? And I said, you remember Sean, who was assistant engineer on the last LP? Like, it isn't contrived, but just because we tend to lock ourselves away, people get their names and everything like that, and I mean, it's almost like a sort of little cult, like that.
So once they've been accepted, they've got a name, and
yeah,
it's nice. Stop worryingly sweet band, really. So the thing I've always found, actually, is that the bands who, from the outside, appear the most awesome and impenetrable are almost invariably, once you get through that barrier, are almost invariably the sweetest band.
Well, I wouldn't say they're sweet, but I mean, it's just that I think around the time of Pornography, I think we were probably an evil bunch of bastards.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I wouldn't say we're sweet, but it's just like it's just as easy to sort of try and get along with people, and than it is to not, just for wanting to, you know, be anti everything. I mean, there's been a couple of times here, which we call one of us has one too many to drink, and then we see each other the next day, and it's invariably me, actually. Robert says, "Ah, outburst night last night." Then I say, "Yeah, I'm sorry." All right.
Says what?
An outburst night. Yeah, you know, where you say, "I'm fucking fed up with everything." But they're just called outbursts. And then like everything's just gone. I mean, in an environment like this, it is very. I think you have to be very close to not. To not. Because you get paranoid every day. You think, hang on. Like I might think, why is Teddy being so quiet? Have I done something wrong? Or why is Robert so quiet? Have I done something wrong? And then that sort of builds paranoia because you're in that environment
at times.
You start
interpreting everything.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, it's just because...
Nothing to say there.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You'll severely find that your closest friends are the ones who you can sit in a room with them for half an hour sometimes and say nothing to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't have to keep a conversation going.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I mean, talking about that kind of paranoia and worry, when Robert was working on the solo album that never happened,
yeah,
was that a worrying time for everybody else? I mean, did everybody else think this is Robert ditching us?
No.
No?
No. No.
Why not?
Because Robert's got a creative flow in him that I think he's... He wouldn't say it himself, but I think he's a workaholic. I think the reason why Robert can get to sleep at night is because he gets everything out of him. And I think Robert likes having a band around him because... Robert, so, I mean, if the band split up today, Robert, Teddy and I would still write songs. And that was just sort of Robert doing his songs. And if he brought it out as a solo LP, it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't worry me at all because it would still be, The Cure would still exist. I mean... Earlier on this year, I left the band for 2 months, just because I thought I'd had enough. And like, it's always the thing that Robert says, isn't it? But this is the last tour, the last LP, and it's always been a running joke. But I actually left for 2 months, and I actually saw his side of it. I think, hang on, it is quite good fun, you know. And I mean, basically it wouldn't, if when he was doing that, it didn't matter because the band was still writing songs and still being The Cure. It was just Robert doing something else.
This extra thing.
Yeah.
But when you what were the 2 months when you left the band?
May and June.
So I'm trying to think what was happening. The band was fairly quiet at that point.
Well, we'd been demoing in East Sussex. I'd been drinking too much and sort of weighing up the responsibilities towards the group and my kids. And just one night, I just said, I've got to, you know, I can't do both anymore. But then, like after 2 months of thinking about it, Robert, see, it was really weird. Like Robert would phone me up a lot, not saying I'll come back to the group, but I realised he was a friend because he was actually genuinely concerned. How I was, and actually I don't know how I got back in the group. It's just sort of like it was one
suddenly
of
these. There
no,
was.
No, no, he
rang you up.
He
told me. He said he rang you up.
He phoned up
about mixers and eventually.
Yeah,
he said, "Oh fuck up."
He phoned up and said he'd been meeting different engineers and stuff. I said, "Oh right." He said, "Well, which one do you think sounds best?" I said, "Well, I'm not sure." He said, "Well, okay. When we're doing the demos, you can meet them all."
Oh,
what?
And
I just said to him, "Shall
Twin
I come
Peaks
back?" Sort of
what?
Thing.
Twin Peaks or what?
Twin Peaks, absolutely. But it is one of the most difficult things I always think for bands. It must be that once you start having children and things, your priorities do shift. And you start, I imagine it's the same for a manager. you suddenly see a different set of perspectives, don't you? And you suddenly think, well, what is the most important thing and how can I best fulfil all the obligations at the same time?
Yeah, it is. I suppose it is hard, but at the same time, it's better to sort of, I think it's better to try and do both than sort of sit around the house, say, "Hello, I'm here, dear, I'm here for the kids and everything," because else there isn't anything. I mean, you know, I got offered a job as a roof tiler when I left, and I said, "Hold up. I'm scared of heights. I don't like getting up, and I actually, you know, again, it sounds corny, but I genuinely do get on with Robert and Perry really a lot.
My theory is that midlife crises actually comes younger for artists.
This could be, I think it's just life crises non-stop.
Yeah.
But I mean, any kind of artistic job takes you away from people. In fact, yeah. there's loads of jobs that aren't, that take you away from people for long chunks of time. You know, there's a lot of worse things. Long distance truck driver.
Yeah.
Exactly. Sailor.
Was there a totally different subject now? Was there an incident at the Belgian and French border where the queue's bus was held up for an hour or something because the customs men wanted to get autographs? Or was that made up by the tabloids as well?
That was Mexico.
Ah, the Belgian French border in Mexico. That Belgian French border.
That was the. No, that was different, wasn't it? That's the Rio Grande on the horrible story.
Where did you cross the border?
Well, when you have to go into Mexico, you have to get off the coach, then get a, because American bus companies won't insure their buses to go into Mexico, etc. And
so they mean, you're meant to switch. Yeah, they were meant to have switched in a cargo depot. A road depot, but the bus driver was an American, a Texan, and he just carried on, lost the plot.
Was this Nuevo Laredo or somewhere like that? What town would it be?
That was.
There's only two or three towns that you.
Well, yeah, what is it? It's the Toledo? Is it Toledo? I think it's Toledo.
Yes, probably.
On the Rio Grande. Yeah, there's only two or three border. They're like, and they are border towns. So what that lot did, unfortunately, they came across in their bus and went into the slipway, went through the American customs point, and then realised they were now entering to cross the river, and they're in Mexican. They were no man's land, really.
Oh, but actually, saying that, the Belgian thing, I think that is true, actually, because we had some videos on the bus, and they wanted to see them. So they sort of made, that's right, that is true.
The video.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean they wanted to watch the videos?
Yeah, they sort of.
In case they were porn or something?
Well, we were just sort of at the back watching videos, and they sort of came on to just check the passports, and just sort of sat down, and then asked for autographs and things. That's right, yeah, I remember that. And we're sort of. And sort of saying, well, yeah, thanks for the passport back. And they just sit in there, and like there was loads of beer about and everything, and they were sort of like looking at, you know, thinking, why the hell the fuck can we get rid of them? But yeah, that is true, actually, yeah.
So you were just stuck there with these guys sitting watching?
Yeah.
Follow the Cure database at tcdb.info. That is tcdb.info.